Translation. Thus accepting the prayers of Srimati Kunti Devi, the Lord subsequently informed other ladies of his departure by entering the palace of Hastinapur. But upon preparing to leave, he was stopped by King Yudhisthira, who implored him lovingly. Purport. No one could make Lord Krishna stay at Hastinapur when he decided to start for Dwarka. But the simple request of King Yudhisthira that the Lord remain there for a few days more was immediately effected. This signifies that the power of King Yudhisthira was loving affection, which the Lord could not deny. The Almighty God is thus conquered only by loving service and nothing else. He is fully independent in all his dealings, but he voluntarily accepts obligations by the loving affections for of his devotee, of his pure devotee. Om Jnana Timrandasya Jnana Salakya Chakchur Mitanyena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Vanavrastam Svapitom Nirbhutale Svayam Vakadamayam Nadati Svaparantikam Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasudeva Gauravaktavanda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Mukti dadati bhakti na karichit. It said, I will give you liberation, but bhakti, that I don't have. You want? No, I'm Liberation, you take it. Bhakti.
The non-Krishna, you have it behind your back. You're hiding it. Yes, you please give me that, what you are hiding behind your back. Krishna says, I don't give this bhakti very easily. Because when I give it, through that bhakti, through that devotional service, I am purchased. Purchased means that Krishna becomes controlled by devotional service. Therefore, Krishna is careful. Yes, liberation, take it.
But bhakti,
I give it rarely. Of course, not in the form of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. In the form of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Krishna is now widely distributing this devotional service. We can read the writings of Prabodhananda Saraswati, who is writing, now the entire world is flooded. Now everyone is just chanting the name of the Lord in ecstasy. In this way, he is taking it, that the Sankirtan movement has inundated the entire world and spread everywhere. We sometimes don't see it. We are here and you think like, well, how many of us? Right? Just a handful. And it appears that the world is really preoccupied with other matters and they have no time for this Krishna consciousness. They want to enjoy material life, isn't it? But that is not the case. Invisibly, devotional service is penetrating everywhere. Invisibly, it is touching the lives of so many people and making within these lives a permanent impression that cannot be removed by anything. That is the nature of devotional service. When the Harinam party goes through the street, then of course everyone in that street is transformed completely. Their material life has come to an end. It is just a matter of time that this Maha Mantra that they have heard will fructify. But that's not everything. Srila Prabhupada explained that not only are the people in the street purified, but the street itself is purified. And anybody who goes through that street afterwards is also being purified and also touched. So in this way, the potency of this movement is enormous. We can't see it because our lifetimes are very short. A very short time span. But just over a little bit of time, the effect of this movement is very, very great. Prabhupada, in one lecture, says, he says, actually, we don't need microphone. We can also speak without microphone. Right? He says, but we're using microphone to purify the microphone maker. Yes. So if we think about that, right, that the microphone maker, probably Sony or Samsung or something, whatever it is, they're all getting purified. They're all getting purified by this, by the fact that devotees use their things. Then the microphone stand, the table, the telephone, even a screw, whoever worked in the screw factory, well, also, somehow or other, whoever put that screw in the box, right, that one screw that came to the temple, that person unknowingly gets purified and gets the mercy. It is that potent. In this way, when our little children are riding around on their tricycles in the courtyard, they're purifying the three worlds. Like that, we can see the potency of this movement is much greater than we know, than we can imagine. But it is important to contemplate on this for a moment, because if we are expanding our understanding of the influence of this movement, then also our faith is increasing. And that is actually the basis of everything.
When our faith is strong, we can do so many things. If we are convinced, yes, Sada Sapta Vishwas Kahe Sudrida Nischai Krishna Bhakti Koila Sarva Karma Krita Hai. If we have the firm conviction that from devotional service all benefits will be attained, then we'll take it up. Then we'll do it. But if we think like, well, devotional service, of course, is very pure. And devotion, of course, is very powerful. But of course, you have to also be a very serious devotee to really get the ultimate benefits. And for most of us, devotional service, well, we stay at the beginning stages, we struggle our whole life, and then what will be the result, you know? I mean, that will stay in the material world, we get some benefit, but it goes on. And that's how we think. Wrong. That's a shallow understanding of devotional service. It is extremely potent, extremely powerful. There are many such statements found in the scripture. One who performs this and this austerity on such and such day will surely attain love of God. There are many such statements. One who hears this narration will surely very quickly develop his love for Krishna. And here we're sitting, and it's not developing so quickly, it seems. But it is. It actually is. It is entering deeply, deeper than we think. One person, he was seeing the devotees at a distance in 1966 in San Francisco. He saw them, or 67 in San Francisco, he saw them. But he thought to himself, he saw that old man, and he saw his followers, and he saw how much they changed. And he was afraid. And he's thinking, I'll keep a safe distance. And he observed Prabhupada from a safe distance, but not safe enough. Not safe enough. Because even although he never came close to Prabhupada, he watched him from a distance and he developed faith. And because he developed faith, later it fructified. And later he became a devotee anyway. It's not possible to just stay at a distance, because even from a distance one is purified. Even from a distance one develops faith. It is that faith that we have in Srila Prabhupada that makes us do all these things. Otherwise, why would we be here? Why would you be so different? You know, like, I mean, I'm used to it now, that people are always looking and staring, you know. But why would you do this? Why would you dress in clothes that are so strange that everyone just looks at you like that, you know? So many times, you know, you're just walking somewhere and you hear the kids asking, "Mommy, why is he wearing such a strange dress?" So, you know, why would you do that to yourself? Like, why would you be so weird? And really, you know, why would you have such a funny haircut? Why can't you just let it grow naturally? Why would you do all these things? Unless you have deep faith in Prabhupada, who actually pointed out, now they look like Vaikuntha man. Right? Okay, Vaikuntha man, here you come. that's the way. But when Prabhupada said it, it made sense. It suddenly, yes, of course, Vaikuntha, men and women, yes, completely normal, actually. This is the real normal standard, yes. When Prabhupada said it. Because he himself was such a normal person. And he established it from Bhagavatam, Nunam Pramate,
nunam pramateya indriya pritya apninoti. And this pramateya, that people who are chasing after sense gratification are pramateya. Mate means mad, and pra means in its full-fledged form. So you could translate it in freely as like raving mad, completely lost it. Well, you know, that's what Bhagavatam says. And when we walk around, we see so many types, and it's sort of convincing, because we see that people are doing so many things that are not exactly sane. And then we see how how the Vaishnavas are living a lifestyle that makes perfect sense, actually. It is sane, it is all beneficial. Everything a Vaishnava is doing is basically beneficial activity. He's not engaging in any negative, destructive activity. And here you go, you know, in the morning, hit yourself with a cup of coffee, and while drinking in the garbage of the newspaper. What kind of start of the day is that? Then how much better is it to start the day with Mangalarti? And then by chanting Hare Krishna, then hearing Bhagavatam. And in this way, the consciousness is solidly filled with transcendental sound, and remembrance is strong. And in that way, it's not difficult to be focused on Krishna. So, here we're seeing that Kunti has offered her prayers to Krishna. She was offering these prayers at a time when Krishna wanted to leave. So part of her motivation for offering the prayers was to delay Krishna's departure. Her attachment to Krishna was so great that even a few seconds of delay, that was better than nothing. Yeah. Nothing like, well, what's the point? He's leaving anyway. No. If he stays only just a few moments longer, that's a few moments longer. Yeah. Oh, those are priceless. No. But then Yudhisthira Maharaj was on another level. Yudhisthira Maharaj was such a dedicated person. He was so extraordinary. We should not just think that Yudhisthira Maharaj was a great devotee. All the Pandavas were great devotees. But amongst them, Yudhisthira was very, very special. It is said that towards the end of the time when the Pandavas were banned, right? And they had been Duryodhana had been on the throne now for 12 years. Then one day Karna and Duryodhana had a discussion, and it was Karna's suggestion. He said, like, you know, now you've been on the throne for so many years and you're quite established. Yes. So he said, there is a rumor about the whereabouts of the Pandavas, where they are keeping in the forest. Right? So why don't we go there and with a whole procession, and just to kind of show them your royal opulence? Great idea. Great idea, Duryodhana said. So they went there, and they had a whole procession, elephants, and Duryodhana took all his queens, and, you know, all decked out in their best and everything. And the whole procession looked inconceivably opulent, very opulent. And Duryodhana was proudly riding on the head of the procession. And then they came past some lake, and in this lake, right, there was a Gandharva residing somehow or other. And this Gandharva saw the entire procession coming, and the Gandharva said, stop, you can't pass by here. This is the kingdom of a great Gandharva king, and you have no right to enter. Return to where you came from. So there's one Gandharva, and there's like, you know, a huge army, right? Powerful army with all its opulence. So Duryodhana just goes like, get out of the way, okay? get out of the way, right? Before we step on you. Yeah. I mean, you know, that kind of mood, translated in local colloquial. you know, Mahabharata, Aussie star. Anyway, there, so it became a fight with this Gandharva, and it became a hell of a fight. And then other Gandharvas joined in, and it got really bad. It got really bad. And at one point, the whole army smashed. Even Karna chased and had to run. You know, had to run to save his life. And I mean, human beings and Gandharvas is not exactly an equal match. You know, I mean, they were losing. They were losing, and finally, the Gandharvas, they had tied up Duryodhana and held him captive. Well, meanwhile, the Pandavas were nearby in the forest. So the news reached them, and Bhima said, well, you know, these Gandharvas did us a great favor, didn't they? You know, they saved us a lot of trouble. No, Yudhisthira said, no, Bhima. He said, you know, amongst us, there are Kurus and there are Pandavas. But when it comes to the outside world, the Pandavas are also Kurus. We are all one family. And these Gandharvas have captured one of our family. We cannot tolerate it. We must go and we must set him free. And Bhima is looking like, has Yudhisthira just lost it? You know what I mean? Has he gone mad? I mean, it can't be true. Arjuna is looking at him incredulously. Oh no, you're not serious. All the Pandavas are just thinking, no, we're not going to save Duryodhana, are we? Right? I mean, there are limits. Come on, Yudhisthira. There are limits, you know. There's Dharma, and then there's something beyond Dharma. Be real, no? And then Yudhisthira said, no, we must save Duryodhana. It is our duty. And then at that time, Yudhisthira himself was engaged in some sacrifice. And, you know, since the sacrifice was not completed, he couldn't leave without losing all the benefit from the sacrifice. Therefore, Yudhisthira said, well, he stayed back. So he was staying back, and they, who didn't want to go, had to go. So it was a big thing. So they went, you know, okay. And they arrived there. And then, okay, the fight started, and Arjuna got into the fight, and suddenly the Gandharvas were facing serious losses, you know, celestial weapons flying around left and right, and it was getting serious. So the Gandharvas started to retreat, and they grabbed Duryodhana, and they took him up in the air, because Gandharvas fly, so they wanted to escape through the air. And then Arjuna, to stop that, shot many arrows, and he made a net of arrows in the sky. It was just a net of arrows, so the Gandharvas couldn't get through. And then, all right, the Gandharvas came, and then Arjuna demanded that the Gandharvas would release Duryodhana. They said, like, well, actually, you know, we were doing him a favor. He came here with all his false ego and so on. And we were simply checking him because of that. Anyway, Arjuna said, release him now. Right. So, you know, they didn't argue with him and released him. So then Duryodhana was so embarrassed, he got saved by Arjuna. It's just like, you know, it's like, he was looking at the ground, he couldn't deal with it, but because he was a Kshatriya. And when you're a Kshatriya, and someone saved your life, then you are obliged to offer something in return.
So looking down at the ground without any smile,
he said to Arjuna, "What do you want?" And Arjuna said, "Nothing. I'll ask that boon later." Yeah. And that boon he asked later. Later. When Bhishmadev had 5 arrows to kill the Pandavas, then he came for that boon. He asked it later. But anyway, then Duryodhana then decided to give up his life. He went to the forest, he sat down, he decided to fast till death, because this was too much humiliation.
And Duryodhana was sitting there fasting in deep meditation. And then the daityas, the demons, appeared before Duryodhana. And they said, "Duryodhana, what are you doing? You are one of us. We have performed so many austerities. And the result of all these austerities is that you have appeared. And Narakasura has also appeared. And he has taken the form of Karna to assist you.
Do not worry, Duryodhana. We are behind you. You are not alone. There will be victory."
Then Duryodhana thought, "Okay, well, maybe I won't fast then." Alright, let's get back into action.
And Duryodhana returned. Of course, he retreated and left the Pandavas there.
So, we can see the inconceivable prowess that the Pandavas displayed. And we can just see the character of Yudhisthira Maharaj. That even the one, you know, who was their arch enemy, the one who really, right, you know, just like consistently from day one, was just so totally envious that he just continuously tried to just block them, destroy their lives in any possible way. That person, and when he got what he deserved, and when he was just honestly defeated in a fair fight, even then Yudhisthira got so dharmic, and he is our family member. So exalted he was that he acted in that way. So against any sentiment, anyone would have had some little bit like, "Well, Duryodhana, so Duryodhana, you have now the roles have reversed, and they're taking you in the sky. Well, go for a bit of a flight." It would be very tempting, but not to Yudhisthira. So this noble character of Yudhisthira was the reason why Yudhisthira's request carried so much weight. It carried so much weight that yes, then Krishna immediately, yes, then I will stay. I must stay. Then he immediately gave his plan. This is the nature of the Vaishnavas. There is a similar pastime in relation to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted to go to Vrindavan. And it's very interesting because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu expressed the desire to go to Vrindavan, but Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and Ramananda Rai, they tried to hold him back, and they started to say, "Actually, very soon the rainy season will start, and then, you know, to go that long journey, my foot, it will be very troublesome. So now is not a good time to go. So maybe you should go later." Later. But then when he wanted to go later, they had again another excuse and said, like, "Well, Dol Purnim is coming up, and maybe better wait for this." And so each time they were delaying him and in various ways. And for a whole year, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu obliged. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came before them and said, for 1 year you have detained me.
He said, now I must beg you to let me go to Vrindavan.
So the interesting part of this pastime is the exchange. There is an exchange where one Vaishnava is obliging others by granting them their request. And if someone is granting us our request, we become indebted to this person. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu for a whole year sacrificed his own ideas for their ideas. And this way, he adjusted to their request. In that way, they became indebted to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Therefore, when after 1 year Chaitanya Mahaprabhu requested, now you have to let me go, then they could no longer refuse because they were indebted. So they had to let him go. So see the intricacies of Vaishnava dealings. See how this indebtedness is very important. When someone does something for us and goes out of his way, then we are indebted. We are indebted, actually, and we have to reciprocate. That is Vaishnava exchange and Vaishnava relationships. So the refinement of Vaishnava relationships is very, very nice. It's very sensitive. It's not like, thank you very much. Thank you very much that you did this for me. I appreciate it a lot. And then you go on doing your own thing. No, that's insensitive. So such insensitive type of behavior is the typical behavior of a conditioned soul who cares only about himself.
Well, thanks a lot. You know, and see you later, alligator.
But not amongst the Vaishnavas. Amongst the Vaishnavas, we must be sensitive. And therefore, whatever service someone has rendered to us, or whatever kindness someone has bestowed on us, whatever friendship someone has shown towards us, that is making us indebted. Another story we find in the Chaitanya Chandra Natak about indebtedness. And this story is about when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was taking sannyas, one day he left Navadvip. And the devotees were practically dying. They only lived by the rope of hope. Because some thought, what if we die? What if we die and then he returns? That would be too much. So we can't die. Although we feel like dying, but we can't die because in case he returns, probably he'll never return. But what if he does? Therefore, maybe he will. Maybe he will. And therefore they stayed alive. And then, at one point, they found out that Nityananda and Acharya Ratna were also missing. And in due course of time, on the third day, Acharya Ratna returned. And Acharya Ratna was talking out loud, why did I leave him? Why did I leave the association of the Lord? Why did I follow the order of Nityananda? Why did I not just ignore it? And why did I not just stay there? Why did I leave? How could I do this? And in this way he was talking to himself, and then the devotee saw him, Acharya Ratna, where is the Lord? And Acharya Ratna says, Acharya Ratna, what happened? What happened to the Lord? Acharya Ratna said, I cannot speak. Well, the devotees were not ready to take no for an answer. So they said, Acharya, speak! With so much force that he was forced to speak. And finally, he said, and everyone understood it. The Lord took sannyas. No. No. How is this? And they were just in total despair and brokenhearted. But then Acharya Ratna said, wait a minute. I have a message from Nityananda for Advaita Acharya. Everyone said, what is it? What is it? Just like Prabhupada used to write letters in the beginning on these blue envelopes. And if a devotee would get a letter, the other devotees would be standing there around the letter. And it would hardly give the devotee the time to read the letter. Finished it? Then it was, give that letter. And everyone would read the letter. It was just public property.
So in the same way, a message for Advaita Acharya, everyone stood up. What is it?
Not your message.
No, everyone was waiting for that message. Then Acharya Ramana told the message. He said, Nityananda says that somehow or other, by hook or by crook, by some means or other, he will bring the Lord to the house of Advaita Acharya. When Advaita Acharya heard that, he began to dance and jump up in the air, and he said, Nityananda, Nityananda, Nityananda. What a friend. He has conquered me. So again, the same dynamics. The dynamics that the devotees, they conquer each other's hearts. It's not just automatic that we can have good relationships. It's not going to work. A meeting, you know, Prabhu's today in this Krishna Goshti, and I wanted to dedicate it to Vaishnava relationships. You know, Prabhuji's, there should be loving exchanges. Satvidam Priti Vatsanam. Yes, the six loving exchanges should be there between the devotees, and everyone is sort of dozing away, right, and thinking, yeah, yeah, yeah. We heard it before, anyway. You know, it's not so easy. It's nice. We have so many Facebook friends, but what's the value? Real friendship means we have to conquer. We have to do something that conquers that person. That's what Yudhisthira did. He conquered. By his behavior, he conquered Krishna. He conquered. And therefore, for him, Krishna was ready to do anything. Peace day. Yes, of course, I'll say. Although, there were a lot of people waiting in Dwarka. We find, meanwhile, it is described how the residents of Dwarka were living as if, like people who were bereft of the light of the sun. And therefore they couldn't see. They couldn't see anything. The residents of Dwarka, wherever they looked, they didn't see anything because they were simply thinking of Krishna. They're totally just blind to anything. But when Krishna came back, it was as if the sun returned. So their desire was also there. And because the Lord is omniscient, he was caught between his devotees. So he had to leave, although he didn't want to. It's not that Krishna was so detached. The Lord is Atmaram, Atmarama Chamuniyo. He is satisfied within himself. The Lord is completely satisfied within himself. Therefore, he's not dependent on anything. But the Lord is purchased by his devotee. And then the Lord becomes deeply attached to the devotee. Sadhanam ridiyam mayam sadhavo ridiyam tramat anyatena janati nahante vyamanagati. As the devotee is always as the Lord is always in the heart of the devotee, the devotee is also in the heart of the Lord. So yes, devotional service is not a mechanical process. It is not that if you have served Krishna for 25 years and then you get a golden watch or something like that, you know what I mean? That you get a reward. No. It's up to him. It is not a matter of time. You also cannot say, but he got the mercy, then I should also get the mercy. That's communism. We should all get the same. No. It's up to Krishna. One day, to one he gives it just like that, and another one he's just trying and still not getting. Doesn't matter. We have to conquer Krishna. We have to conquer him with our service. So it's not, well, I've done 5 kilos of service, so now I should get at least 5 grams of mercy. You cannot measure like that. Yeah? No, you can't weigh it. There's no such thing.
It's entirely causeless. It's entirely up to Krishna. And Krishna wants to see, what are you going to do for me? And you think, yes, I am now, chanting the holy name for some years, and I'm following all the principles, but I'm not really feeling that I'm changing very much. So I have a feeling that maybe I'm not really making any advancement. No.
Krishna is watching you. Krishna is watching everything you do. He notices everything. Krishna is seeing, oh, now he's served me for 1 year. Oh, now he started serving for the second year. Oh, now already 7th year serving. That's like,
meanwhile, I don't feel I've changed at all. I'm struggling so much in my spiritual life. Oh, will I ever make advancement? I don't know. And Krishna is looking like, oh, so long, so nicely, this devotee is serving me with dedication. Krishna's heart is melting. Day by day, Krishna is becoming more favorably disposed. But then Krishna is thinking, but let me see a little more if he is really serious. So I'll wait a little longer just to make sure that he doesn't fall back down. And in this way, Krishna is watching us. Krishna is waiting. So we're making advancement. Lots of it. We're purchasing Krishna. That's what it's all about. Am I developing all the qualities by which the brahmanas work? It's difficult. 1 year I was in Mayapur and I was talking with Jananivas, the original. Anyway, I was walking with him in Mayapur and we're talking about being a brahmana. And he says, oh, this is very difficult. He said, we are from this age of Kali. It is very difficult for us. And as I was thinking, it is very difficult for you, then what's my hope, right? Because he's more brahminical than I am, undoubtedly. So what can be said? We may not, even after many years, develop all the good qualities that are recommended in the scripture. Can we stop lying? It's not so easy. If we would be like Pinocchio with the nose, Hare Krishna, we might find ourselves in trouble. What can be said? It's hard. Even with all the tilak and the kunti mala and everything and chanting our 16 rounds, can we stop lying? Difficult. So, in terms of, we can look at ourselves in the mirror and judge ourselves very hard and say, I'm so fallen. I'm still not a pure devotee. But Krishna is looking at us. And Krishna is looking at the surface of Krishna, is seeing, still lying anyway, what to do, Kali Yuga. But at least doing such nice service. And that is difficult. So, because Krishna is becoming purchased, and then Krishna will overlook things. Then we capture his mercy. So this is what we're trying to do. Yes, of course, we want the qualities of a Vaishnava. We should stop lying. We should. But we should at the same time also have faith that our service never goes in vain. In the Nectar of Devotion, there is a nice story about in relation to Draupadi. Of course, we all remember Draupadi, who was there in the assembly, and Dushasana tried to pull off the cloth and all that, and how at first she was holding on to the cloth. But what could she do, a lady, against that powerful kshatriya, with powerful muscular arms? You know, what could she do? He was so much stronger. How could she, with her two little arms, do anything? So she realized it.
Then she threw her hands up in the air and called out, Hey Govinda. So in the Nectar of Devotion, it describes, it said that whenever Krishna remembers, Krishna says, Krishna speaking, he says, whenever I remember that Draupadi threw her arms up in the air and just called out, Hey Govinda, he said, whenever I'm thinking about that, right, my appreciation for her is increasing. So it's a very significant statement, right? Because Krishna is not known to be forgetful.
Krishna is like, who was that again from the sari? What was her name again?
that girl. Krishna doesn't have these problems. You know, that's us. You know. I mean, come on, that's an answer. The tip of my tongue. You know. Draupadi. Yeah, Krishna. He can remember very everything. So Krishna doesn't forget someone's service. What service did he do again? What was that again? Krishna knows everything. He remembers everything. So Krishna, whenever I remember that service, my appreciation for it increases. So we can appreciate that the appreciation of Krishna is increasing and increasing and increasing. And more service is being done. And that also is increasingly received. So Krishna is extremely generous, very generous. Therefore, we can understand that the service that we do will impress Krishna. But now comes the doubt. But what if, well, the service wasn't of very good quality? Draupadi's service was of good quality, but our service, we know, is half baked at best. Right? Yeah. What if, you know, what will our half baked service, our reluctant service, do? The servants, you know, we have to clean the temple floor and think, okay, oh God, I'm on the roster. Oh God. The temple floor. Oh God. Oh no. And it's just during breakfast and, you know, yeah, it's like, yeah, of course, I'm going to get the leftovers today. Yeah, and some, okay, I'll ask someone to save it, but they never save what you want, you know what I mean? And you get this big plate, and it's all mixed up. Oh God, if there's one, I really hate that. It's like a temple cleaning shift after the class, you know. I can't stand that one. Oh God. And they gave it to me. Oh no. Anyway, okay, you know, surrender. One, two, three. I know how to do it. You've done it many times. Really quick. Done! Still, I run upstairs. And Krishna's looking, and you know, Radhavallabha's looking. It's like, oh no. Oh no. The floor is not clean. Oh no. And then, you know, and especially on Sunday after the Sunday feast, on Monday morning you come and you walk through the temple room for japa and you feel your socks sticking to the floor. And you know, and there's some spots. And you find your lane, you know, and like you walk up and down. And at one point, you know, tile number 7. Right? Watch out. And there's a sticky spot. And the socks stick. Right? Have you gone through it? Oh God, sometimes on Monday you pay obeisances and you feel your glued to the floor. Yuck, you know. With your clean cloth. Anyway, and Radhavallabha sees it all. Right, sees it all. Sees every spot you missed. Oh God, missed that one. And that one too. And not even like because they're just spaced out. No, because they didn't care. So what if the service is of that quality? Will it conquer Krishna? Don't know. So, in Vrindavan, right, every year on Srila Prabhupada's disappearance day, there's a glorification of Srila Prabhupada. And at that time, many Vaishnavas from other mats and temples are also coming to glorify Prabhupada. And that's very nice. And for many years, one of Prabhupada's godbrothers, Bhakti Vaibhav Puri Maharaj, was coming every year. And I saw him coming over the years for that festival. And when he was younger that meant in his mid-80s, he used to tell stories. He used to tell stories about, you know, him and Prabhupada and this and that, you know. But the last time I saw him, that he came, he was 93 or 94, something like that. And he couldn't really walk very well. So there were some brahmacharis, they were carrying him, you know, so under the armpits, and he was sort of walking along like that, being held up by two men. And then they brought him to the Vyasasan and they sort of dropped it. And like, he landed on the pillow, and I looked at it, you know. I thought, "Oh my God, you know, it's hard, it's heavy to get old, right?" And I saw it, like, you know, I thought, like, "Oh my God, it's heavy to get old." And then, you know, he started to speak, and you know, they Gaudiya Math, they go, "Prabhupada, Swamiji," you know. They said, "So," he said, "Swamiji," he said, "he made you all Vaishnavas." Yeah. And he said, "And Vaishnavas have the power to give blessings. Therefore, you all please bless me." And that was his talk. That was it. It was good, you know, because A, he gave credit to Prabhupada that he made all of these, you know, the real Vaishnavas. So A, he gave credit to Prabhupada that he made the Vaishnavas. Two, and he also recognized that they were actually real Vaishnavas. So a full recognition was there of what Prabhupada did. And he said, "Vaishnavas can give blessings, so please give me blessings." So it was so short, and there was a lot in it. And I was thinking about it later. And I was thinking, yes, when you are old, when you're old like that, you are facing death. And you know it. And you know it. And you start to think, Will the service I have done, will it be enough? And you think, probably not. Probably not. And at that time you start to think, what I need is the blessings of as many Vaishnavas as possible. Because if the Vaishnavas, if they bless me, that will add on to my case. You can say it goes in the file, you know. At the end of life, they look at your file. Many bed, temple floors, yes. Half-baked service. Only broken malas, you know, only broken mantras. Total report. Hopeless quality of service, right? Shall we let this one in? Some say, you know, there's a whole discussion. Some say, well, you know, let this one, maybe better, he or she does it one more time, you know, one more life, just to get a better quality. Yeah. Don't think we can let this one pass. But then someone will say, no. This one, you know, this one has many blessings from the Vaishnavas. They're all requesting that you bestow the mercy upon this one. Oh, okay, all the Vaishnavas. All right, yes. If this one is a follower of Prabhupada, oh, let him go. So we should know, we are not only being judged on our own performance, but we are also getting the added benefit of the blessings of the other Vaishnavas. Then Prabhupada always writes in his letter, begins, "Please accept my blessings. Please accept them." We are not accepting yet. Thank you for the blessings. We are not accepting. So like that, we are showered with Prabhupada's blessings and with the blessings of the Vaishnavas. Yes, then we can conquer Krishna. We can conquer. Because they have conquered Krishna. And then surely Krishna will bestow his mercy upon us. So we can think like that. How we are very fortunate and how actually every little service that we do is of great benefit because it conquers Krishna, just as Yudhisthira conquered Krishna. Okay, thank you very much. Any questions? Any comments?
Yes,
Prabhupada,
you what it really means to be, we normally talk about being humble and sort of humility and things. How do we actually be humble among devotees and among the outside world? Is there a behavior in the sense that is it all thought of something? What's the true meaning of being humble with, among the devotees?
Actually, the verse Tinalapi Sunichena, Tororapi Sahisuna, Amani Namanila, Kirtanya Sadahari. The third verse of the Sikshastakam, which deals with the topic of humility, says, more tolerant than a tree, more humble than a blade of grass. And at the end, it says, ready to offer all respects to others. It doesn't say devotees, it says others. So one must even be humble in relation to the non-devotees. Always. That is the actual standard. Now, how to be like that? I think there are different ways to approach it at the same time. You know, just like how to deal with the cold, you have to take some vitamins, drink orange juice, put fix vapor up, and you know, stay warm. You do many things at the same time. So for humility also, you must approach it from many sides at the same time. One thing that must be there, which is a beginning, is honesty. And you can begin with that. And you can think, well, maybe I'm not God. Maybe not, after all. What do you think about that? You know, it's like, you could maybe come to that point. Maybe not. Then next best level is pure devotee. Well, maybe I'm not even a pure devotee. Maybe I even have a few impurities, maybe. And if we do, maybe have some faults. All right, now we are ready to admit we have some faults. So this honesty, humility, doesn't mean that you put the hands together like this and they're always together. Yeah? That's called superglue. Super good. No, actually, humility means that we are honest about our own shortcomings, and more honest. Therefore, it said, a sadhu, a saintly person, is one who is thoroughly honest, ready to admit all mistakes, no cover up, and just ready to admit our faults. And if we once we start. So take a pen and paper and start writing down your faults. And after your hand gets tired from, you know, from writing too much, you take a break. And then after some time, you can look at it again and add some qualities, some faults. You find many, many. So in this way, by remembering that we actually have many faults, we can be humble. And that will keep us humble. So you start thinking, I have many great qualities. Then we are very important. Then we act humble. That's another way. Although we don't claim any praise for ourselves and so on. And in this way, slowly, slowly, we'll become humble. And then there is Krishna. And there is something called Pula Musika Bhav. The mouse, you remember the story of the mouse that had a problem and went to the yogi and said, what is your problem? He said, cat. Oh, yes, what would you like me to do about it? I want to be a cat. To pass to be a cat. He was a cat. Cat came back, had a problem, it was a dog. What you want to be? You want to be a dog. Dog had a problem. Tiger. What you want to be? Tiger. Then he looks at the yogi, licking his lips. Yogi said, now what do you want? And he says, I want to eat you.
Puna musikaba, be a mouse again. Yeah?
You heard the story.
If not, then you heard it now.
So, this Puna musikaba, actually we find life is like that. Have you also been a mouse? I have been a mouse again and again in my life. Many times. It is karma does this to us, you know. Karma reduces us, just at the height of your glory, you know. Reduced again, reduced. Just when you are finally, after a whole life of struggle, getting on top of it, you become old and deluded. Start dribbling from the mouth again. Just like when you were a baby, be a mouse again. So again and again in life, we go through situations that make us humble. So it's not only that we are doing it self, Krishna is also helping us to become humble. Don't worry. But take advantage of these lessons. You know, my mother used to say, just act normal. That's crazy enough.